Welcome to Revere Assets, Your Money, with Danny Stewart.
You never know how far the stock is going to go down.
Tim Razor.
Danny knows I'm a geek for all of this stuff.
And Don Vandenborg.
Telling it like it is.
If you're seeking the best stock knowledge this side of Wall Street, you've come to the right place.
I'm sorry, did I steal your stuff?
No, you didn't steal any thunder. Who's handling this segment?
For the next hour, Danny, Tim, and Don will be talking investing.
Investing is 90% psychological, and I love that.
Trades.
The market will usually overshoot to the downside and to the upside.
And dumpster fires.
Because it doesn't matter what you think or what I think, and it matters even less what Danny thinks.
And now, here's your hosts, Danny, Tim, and Don.
I don't know about you, but I have seen a proliferation of cannabinoid oil. Danny, is it cannabinoid oil? Or is that why they just call it CBD? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, CBD oil.
These storefronts are popping up in third-rate strip mall shopping centers across America, I think, because on my drive-in, to the shop, and I don't live very close to the shop. I live maybe 45 minutes, an hour away. I pass a buttload. I mean, we've got to be at some kind of CBD oil top. I mean, it's almost, I don't know if the stock nerds and market lovers have the same noticings that I have been noticing, but these CBD oil shops appear to be popping up like all of the vape shops did, you know, when people want to stop smoking, they go to vape. And then they go out of business. And then, do you remember Marble Slab, the ice cream place, Danny?
I do.
Yeah. Everyone seemed to have a Marble Slab, franchise, and then all of a sudden, poof, they disappeared. And so I wonder if this moment in time, it's CBD oil shops. And here's the thing about all this stuff, stock nerds, market lovers, and I'll get to my thoughts here in the markets in a moment. Here's the thing about this. There's no purity standards. I mean, look, oh man, someone's going to write to me and just accuse me of pure ignorance. Let me confess to ignorance right now. Never been in a CBD oil shop. As a matter of fact, I have some pretty liberal stances here on the topic. So don't be accusatory or judgmental right now, even though I am, and I'm being a hypocrite. But what are the purity standards? And I think the same thing too, by the way, about all these vape shops. Like you don't, Do you really know where that stuff's being made? And even if they slap a label on it, like made in my grandmom's kitchen in the highest standards of purity, like do you believe it? Like there's just no, Danny, what's the governing body that looks at vape? They call it vape juice, by the way, which I don't know why that grosses me out, but it grosses me out. Like, where's that stuff made? Like, does it have formaldehyde in it? Is it just Prestone antifreeze made to look clear and smell like strawberries?
Like, I have no idea.
Right. But people are putting this in their bodies and I'm like, is this stuff really better than cigarettes? And then I'm like CBD oil. Now look, I really like, if you want to know, the things that, a lot of the marijuana based medicines can do for people, especially with epilepsy, it's just a ton. Like I'm a huge fan. So don't read into anything I'm saying other than, I wonder about the purity of this stuff. And then some of the claims that some of these people make that the CBD oil can do. I mean, it can do everything from polish your furniture to lubricate your knee joints. And anyway, I just noticed it. It's like America Shawman is a huge name apparently because I see that name. They must have come into Dallas and sold a ton of franchises because everybody and their brother is opening up a CBD oil shop. And I feel bad because, you know, in a couple of years, I mean, if someone's going to come in and centralize that, right, and offer some kind of purity standard, I mean, surely that's going to happen, right, Daniel?
Well, one would hope so.
Right. I mean,
and by the way, do you know you can even vape CBD oil?
No, really?
Yes, it's not. So the original vaping came out as a replacement for cigarettes with nicotine, to try to stop smoking.
Right.
But just recently I saw an ad where you could got the ingestibles. You can either eat it or rub it on your skin or whatever. But now I believe you can even vape CBD oil.
Well, as the saying goes, if you smoke them, got them. If you got them, smoke them. That's what the saying is. So listen, Stock Nerds and Mark Lovers.
You just don't know what you got, though.
Well, that's what I keep thinking. Like, not only did people have to buy these licensing and franchise fees when it's this one brand I'm thinking of, you don't know. Like, what liability are you opening yourself up to? When you don't know what you're selling to people and the people taking it, well, that's on the people buying it. I mean, there is an inherent trust that when you buy a product, the toothpaste you're using doesn't have antifreeze in it. Like maybe some of the stuff sold at dollar stores occasionally. It's the same reason why people don't get their prophylactics at the dollar stores, right? Like if you said, hey, where do you get your prophylactics at? 9 chances out of 10, it's not the dollar store. and why is that, Danny? Why would you not get your prophylactics at the lowest cost provider?
I'd want some quality control.
There you have it. Right, right. And so when you go to Back Alley CBD store in DegenerateStripMall.com, which is, by the way, where strip mall advisors live. Where's the quality? Like, what people put in their bodies is amazing. And I mean, Danny, I've gone down a rabbit hole that I don't think I can pull myself out of. And I say that because I was about to say, it's like we need some kind of governing body. And then someone's going to step in and go, stop being the bigger hypocrite, Tim. We have a governing body over the stock market. And look how well that's worked out for people. Right. You keep fining people and the system doesn't get better. I just had lunch with somebody the other day. Mary Tolstead, John Stumpf. You need to be in prison so people stop committing a lot of this white. If they were the poster children for white collar fraud and prison. Man, oh man. I think you stop a lot of it. Wells Fargo, if you're not familiar, you can Google the whole thing. So anyway, Daniel, I've got a couple things I want to cover. I'm going to forget to do the market stuff at the end of the show because Don's not joining us. But before I do any of this, Stock Nerds and Market Lovers, one, love you. You support us. I tell you what, we've been prepping you for this week for a while now. And the videos, I think, have done a really good job of educating you and what we're looking for. And I got a couple of questions about buy triggers in this type of environment. I'm going to cover that here in a moment. But before I do that, if you like what you hear, if you are thinking about becoming a client of the firm, you've waited. Maybe you've been doing this on your own, or your pie chartist, your strip mall advisor, your Johnny Bag of Donuts has underperformed your expectations. Maybe you want to join our family. We would love to have you, or at least entertain the idea of you joining us. So if you want to do that, 855 Real Wealth is the number. You can email Dan@Revere Asset. You can email me. I'm Tim@Revere Asset or Don, who has that wonderful blue chip income portfolio that I constantly tell you about. And I am telling you, in market weeks like this, that blue chip income portfolio is nothing short of fantastic. And so, as we continue here in our sojourn, I'm going to tell you that I'm going to forget the market stuff at the end of the show, and it's because Don is not here. And so, let me do this real quick. There was a clue that a face-sucking rally could come about Friday. It didn't come as soon as I thought it would happen, but it's something called the skew, and it prices out-of-the-money puts. Pretty effectively, and you can Google skew and get the definition of it. I don't want to kill the show any more than I did with CBD oil talk. Skew, though, is what professional traders view as risk. It's a secondary indicator to me, very, very secondary, whereas I'm using primarily the VIX futures. But skew is cluing you in that markets weren't pricing in a lot more risk. So, well, then, Tim, what was that downside on Friday morning? You know what a lot of that was? A lot of that was auto trailing stops picking people off. They couldn't take the pain anymore, and their stops got hit. And look, buying starts when selling it dries up. Now, that's not very profound, what I just said, but the algorithms, who you're competing with during the trading day. Do you notice the first 15 minutes of trade? That's all human. You notice how it jostles around? Those are the orders that have piled up overnight. Then typically after the first 15 minutes to an hour, to a half hour, maybe an hour, the computers then start taking over. You're competing against computers. And they're just finding people's pain points. It works to the downside and it works to the upside. Some of you will argue and you'll yell at me, well, Tim, the market's rigged. Is it rigged if you know? Is it rigged if you know what you're competing against? Is it rigged if you have risk control in? Is it rigged if you have taken some chips off the table and you just kind of let things develop and you hold your strongest position? No, I don't think it's rigged in that regard. It's actually admitting to what is taking place and then executing your, or in this case, our trading plan against it. And you can see that play out in the five different videos to which we've done this week. You can see all of it play out. That speaks to nothing of what you would deem success or not. It just means you're executing your trading plan. It doesn't mean you made money. It doesn't mean you lost money. It means that you're executing your trading plan against your rules. And a lot of you, I shouldn't say a lot of you in the listening audience, but a good number of people that you know, they're lacking those rules. And they're just praying to Mount Trumpmore to get them out of this trade deal hell that he's placed you in. That is not a good place to be. And so what do you look for in terms of a reversal? Well, you need, and this is a specific question. Daniel, you mind if I cover this real quick?
Go ahead.
You know what? Before I forget, I like Twilio here. Twilio, Danny and I were talking 2 days ago. Twilio was a bright light in a dark night, and it continued to be that pretty much all week. And I like TWLO for further upside. I digress. So there's a couple things to look for that clues you in to look for a short covering rally. Now, does a short covering rally stall out? Maybe. I don't know. But you're using risk control and you have sell rules. So it's okay to step back in. When you have sell rules, you can step back in because you know how to get back out. It's not Thunderdome, two men enter, one man leaves. You can leave anytime. You can both leave. That's the beauty of having sell rules. But a lot of you, if you just take it one step further with me, a lot of you don't have sell rules because you don't have entry rules. You don't even know how the hell to get back in. You just willy-nilly wing it. And it doesn't have to be that way. So what do I look for during weeks like this? I look for a high put-call ratio. I point all of this out in the video. Just go to revereasset.com and you can see these things develop. So high put-call ratio, I like it above one. We finally sustained there on Friday. High 10-day moving average of the put-call ratio. I like it about 0.9, around 0.9 or above. There's very few things proprietary in my world. And the reason why I say that, I could tell you this is all secretive stuff, what I'm telling you. But the truth of the matter is, it's the psychology of the markets that gets you. I'm going to tell you all of this, and some of you will not pull the trigger next time you see these things come up. Whereas we pulled the trigger on Friday on some things that we like based on what I'm telling you right now. So, and it has nothing, by the way, this is not machismo or bravado. It's just rule following. And it's not me knowing the next tick of the market. I don't know the next tick of the market. Do you? I don't. And what I'm telling you, does it have anything to do with Trump? Does the market, like the market, you... And what appears to be news-driven, if I took away all the news from you, if you played out the charts, if you just put the charts in front of you and looked at them and you were in a vacuum, like you were in a you were void of any outside information except price, this would probably look normal. But we have to have reasoning. Our minds have to know why something's happening. So you assign a reason. And then that reason, it permeates your brain. And then it starts to drive fear. Well, what if this gets worse? I can't do X, Y, and Z. And then it paralyzes you. And then you can't take any action. And then it's like the markets when they go higher without you. And it happened. Listen, susceptibility to this is not. Susceptibility to what I'm about to describe is 100%. Everyone at some point in time gets the fear of missing out. Believe me, I do. And that's how you learn over time to get the callus of when you go swimming, you don't get upset that you didn't go touch all the water, even though it was fun swimming. You didn't go, I didn't go down to that end of the pool. I should have done. Oh, I'm disappointed. Nobody says that. You can't touch it all. And so you just like, all right, well, I'm going to sharpen my focus so I can uncover the biggest potential movers. And then you participate the next time. And there will be, in fact, a next time. Okay. So we've got a high put call ratio. We got a low skew. And I view a low skew as below 125. We got a low skew. Low skew last night, by the way, is 117. Put call ratio goes higher. Towards the afternoon, we started getting plus 1,000 tick readings to the upside. You get anything. If you don't know what any of this means, if you want definitions of all this stuff, just call 855-REAL-WEALTH. We'll give it to you. We don't mind. 855-REAL-WEALTH. And you can email Dan at Revere Asset or Tim at Revere Asset or Don at Revere Asset. But the thing is, these emails get long and sometimes they can become convoluted because there's back and forth questions. It's so much easier to have a conversation on a telephone. I know. Some people are scared of the phone these days. Just call. We'll never, ever, ever, ever call you back if you don't want to be. We don't have any salespeople. You're not going to be part of some marketing plan. You ask a question, you get an answer, you hang up the phone and you move on with your lives. That's kind of what we promise you here, unless you want us to contact you. It's a lot. We're very refreshing in that regard. And so high put call ratio, low skew, you couple that with a couple thousand plus 1,000 tick readings, that tends to get the shorts a little bit scared. Then you can look further into it. And I covered this stuff on several of the videos this week, so you would see it happen in real time. You'd recognize it when you see it happening in real time. The VIX, the cash VIX, the people's VIX, the VIX that if you called it that to anybody else, they're going to make fun of you because I'm the only person that calls it the people's VIX or the cash VIX. It closed inside the Bollinger Bands. It's very telling. What's also telling is that the cash VIX was negative when the stock market was negative on Friday. That's another huge clue that a rally could ignite at any moment. It doesn't have to ignite. It's very, very highly probable that if you have that situation where the market's down and the cash VIX is down, then any high tick readings will most likely be the kindling that lights the fire of a short covering rally. Does that all make sense, Danny? Did I say that properly? Because I've got one more piece, but I don't want to go on if it's...
You did. No, that was okay. Well said, Tim.
Last piece of the puzzle here. The VIX futures. They uninverted. So we got this situation where the... And I have spent so much time discussing the VIX futures. So we've got this situation here with the VIX futures. Uninverting, which means now that risk is back. It's a risk on trade, which means stocks can be bought. You take action. And so what do? We bought, the easiest thing to do is just buy one of the indices, because I could buy something off my stock watch list. I like the stocks we have. I wanted to just do something simple. So I bought a double SPY ETF. I got my pitch and I took my swing and I liked the chart. And based on that, I took a very low risk entry. Well, what does low risk mean? It means I know where I'm getting out at if the rally should fail. A lot of you will tell me, you know, if rallies, well, these rallies, you know, can fizzle out, but these rallies can also fuel higher prices than you realize. So you take your chance. Some of you want absolute guarantees and you'll wait. And you'll wait till it's too late or the market has already made its move. Then it wants to pull back. And this is a vicious cycle that happens to a lot of people. It happened to me until I figured it out. And so, and by the way, market gods, that doesn't mean I have it figured out. It just means I figured out this one pattern and I try my best not to, in fact, repeat it. So you want confirmation that stocks are going to go higher the moment you participate because you've been burned before. And so what happens, the market gives you some kind of whatever you think the confirmation signal is. It's been going higher for a week now. It looks like it's ready to go. And then the day you buy something is the day the market pulls back. What you have to have. And then, by the way, you can't take the pain anymore of the intermediary pullback. So you sell. And then the moment you sell, the thing that you bought goes higher without you. It's a vicious cycle. And I've got all the, I'm telling you, man, I'm with you right away. Like, I feel you. I know what that's like. But if you have some rules to just sneak in, and by sneak in, it doesn't mean you're buying early. It just means, oh, this is my pitch. What I just described at the top of the show is my pitch. Okay, well, let's buy something off my watch list. And let's say that you, like we typically do, 5% stock positions, 10% ETF positions. So let's say that you've got rules, but you're not sure. What's the conservative thing to do? Is it nothing and then chase later? Or is it recognizing your rules, recognizing your pitch, seeing it, and then buying a half position? Yeah. So at least you're participating. And that does a lot for you psychologically. You're acting upon rules. You're not acting upon emotion. You might feel emotional when you're doing it. It might not feel good when you're doing it. You might have some kind of other feelings when you're doing it. But you've written down your rules. You're enacting your trading plan. And then you're going to let it play out. And that's how you get long and this kind of environment. Well, Tim, what if it doesn't work out? Well, there's always that chance. Every time you step into the market, like there's no, like when people are so susceptible to this marketing, and it's not your fault. Wall Street has ruined investing with their marketing. There's no safe investments. They're all evil. Well, Tim, they're safer investments. I won't even go that far. If you're buying stocks or ETFs, there's always the chance they can go down. How safe is that? If you want safety, using a ridiculous example, I went to Iraq 3 times, and we always preached safety. And the thought crossed my mind with a couple of my friends once, well, if we really wanted to be safe, we'd probably just leave the helicopters in the barn. We wouldn't take them out. That's the ultimate safety, not participating. Putting your cash under the mattress, so to speak. But how you affect your rules and how you control your risk, that's the safest thing you can do in this environment. It's almost akin to saying that you want to get into a knife fight and not get cut. You're probably going to get cut. But how do you react when you get cut? Do you have sell rules? And then how do you respond? Do you have entry rules? Does that all make sense, Daniel?
Yeah, let me clean up a couple points and put on my Timterpreter. So what Tim was saying is, you know, when the market got choppy just recently, last couple of weeks, we started raising cash. And we raised anywhere between 25-30%, depending on the portfolio, but we raised cash. Then today, the Friday morning, the market was soft, was still soft and weak. And then all of a sudden, we saw a reversal taking place with 3 or 4 different confirming indicators, or they're confirming each other, and especially the VIX futures when it uninverted, and the Dow went from being negative, you know, triple digit to going positive. We had a trade preloaded, and we, like Tim said, we already had some stocks we owned, but rather than trying to pick a couple more winning stocks, because this may be a shorter term rally or short term rally, whatever it may be, we used a broader ETF, the S&P 500. We did a double, so you don't have to get as much. And we took either a 7% position or a 10%, depending on the portfolio. And boom, you're in with just one trade. And the beauty of that is, next week, if the rally doesn't hold or it doesn't pan out, you can just unwind that position, and there you are. You still at the same position. So it's a easier way to maintain than trying to add three different individual positions.
And I'm sorry.
I was going to say, and it's got a little bit of diversification. You know, right now it's all boats are floating. The whole market started rallying. So rather than trying to be too cute, we did a broad-based investment saying we want more exposure. We want to dial up from being heavier in cash to being not so heavy in cash. And you can do that with one trade. And that's why ETFs, sorry, Uncle Tony, are a great tool. Sometimes you want to use individual stocks, and sometimes you want to use either sector or broad index-based ETFs, because both are tools and both are valuable at different times, depending on what your goal is, what you're trying to do.
Yep, that's exactly what I'm trying to say. And so hopefully it helps. And then I'll leave you with this on this topic here, stock nerds. There's a saying a lot of snarky people on FinTwit like the breakout, buy the rumor, sell the news. Meaning you, if there's a scant idea floating around, you would buy the stock that it's being talked about. And it, when finally news hits for that stock, you sell it. This feels, and I use the word feel there, this feels like the exact opposite, where you sell the rumor, the tariffs are coming. And then when they hit, you buy the news. That's what it feels like right now. We shall see how it develops. But I don't get Trump's accounting for the tariffs. I think a lot of you are in the same boat, meaning it's the consumer that pays for it. But hopefully the competitive landscape of retail right now is such, a couple notes on this, is such that a lot of companies, have they moved their production out of China since the trade war was announced last year? I believe March of 18. There's that. A lot of companies have, from what I've been reading. Doesn't mean all of them have, but they've had a year. Two, the landscape is so competitive right now in retail. Who absorbs that? The consumer or the retailer? Well, we'll find out. But with Walmart and Amazon at each other's heels, it'll be really interesting to see how that works. Now, look, that means margins get squeezed on the manufacturers, and that's not good for the manufacturing companies, for the retail products at which you're buying. Got it. But, and maybe some of the retailers suffer here too, but if you're more domestic-based, or in the case of Amazon, where you're more, Amazon is considerably reseller-based. Mm-hmm. That's right. Look it up. They are considerably more reseller-based than they ever have in their history, meaning they're relying on people like you and me to go in there and sell products. So it's not corporations. So it'll be interesting to see how Amazon responds or acts in this environment. Interesting how the markets trade in this environment. And from what I understand, the tariffs, and who knows what the reasoning is, but these are just interesting things to talk about. The tariffs don't apply to any products that are in the ocean right now on vessels heading, steaming to America's shores. It would be new ship, new product leaving China, as some people call it. And so it'll be interesting to see if this gets resolved before the first boat leaves China for America. Who knows? Okay, covered all that. I'm looking at my sheet, Danny. It's tough. I've got a whole sheet of writing that I can't read right now.
You're like me, can't read your own handwriting.
No, I can't. And that's kind of, I've got a note here that literally says shot across the bow, and I don't know what I wrote it down for. I've got a note here. Oh, I know what this note means. I wrote this down earlier. Tell you what, this is exactly how the note reads, and I'll explain it. Tell you what you want to hear, what you should hear, not what you want to hear. I know what this is in relation to. So Danny has a lot of conversations, And I'm grateful that Danny takes a lot of the calls. But I want to share this with you because I think it's interesting. Danny's talking with someone. And this someone relays to Danny that it was refreshing to hear Danny talk. The question, Danny, you want to tell the story? I don't want to butcher it. Do you want to tell the story? You know where I'm going with this?
Yeah. Well, so I had a call just recently, the last 3 or 4 days, and a fairly sophisticated investor, does a lot of his own investments, but he's kind of ready to retire and move on and not watch it so close. He and his wife want to enjoy life. And he said, you know, he's been interviewing about 10 or 12 advisors. And the first thing he asked us, well, how would you get out of what would be your cell discipline? And he said, you guys, meaning us, Revere, are the only one that actually has one or touts one. All the other places said, you just stay the course. You don't take any defensive action. And he said, that's the first thing he didn't like. And then he goes, what can you expect? I mean, what, you know, a lot of these places will show me this, you know, 7% annualized over the long term over time. But, you know, what can you guys expect? And I said, well, look, to be honest with you, we've got to take kind of what the market gives us with a defensive stance. So sometimes a 2% or even a negative 2% return could be a great return if it's in a really negative market. However, you know, if the market's down quite a bit, negative 2 or flat or positive 2 could be very good. I said, but then there'll be some years where you make double digit, you make very good solid returns. So the thing that I can't stand is the insurance companies or the brokerage houses. They always give you this illustration showing this even keel 7% every year, year in, year out, which absolutely will never happen. The one thing I can guarantee you is that will never happen. It won't happen that way. So, you know, the other thing I told them is I said, look, a lot of people ask, what is our average turnover? And I tell him, look, it as much as necessary, but as little as possible. So I don't want to overtrade and I don't want to undertrade. I want to trade enough to get defensive if I have to. And in some years, was it 2017, Tim, where the market just went up slow, just continually went up with hardly any pullbacks? You have very, very little turnover. You almost have to do any trade. You just kind of stay the course and buy, I don't want to say buy and hold like long term, but you didn't have to do much. However, sometimes when the market gets real choppy, like the fourth quarter of last year, you've got to get real defensive. And we went almost in just by second week in December, we were all cash. And then in January, throughout January, we started adding in. So those 2 months, we probably had as much transactions as we did all of 2017. And so it depends. There's different time for it. It's not just even. And he actually liked that. He said, you know, that's kind of, you know, funny because nobody tells you that. All they tell you is they give you this illustration based on 7%. And they're all, he said, every single other advisor that I interviewed was either 7 or 8%. One of those two, and it's always the same. And you're telling me that money's not going to be made evenly. Sometimes you're going to make big money. Sometimes you'll be flattish, and sometimes you'll make some money. But as long as you don't have the big drawdowns, if you protect against the big major double-digit drawdowns, that's where you're really. It's a lot easier, especially if you're in at or near retirement. It's a smoother ride. We call it the equity curve. It's a smoother equity curve. And by the way, even if you're 25 or 30, you know, the old philosophy at the brokerage world is, well, if you're young and dumb and 25, you should have a bunch of them because you can live through 3 major corrections, and therefore you should have a much emerging market, small cap and technology companies, and you should have a bunch of go-go stuff. Well, here's a novel idea. Why don't you have a sell? Because you have the time frame. You have time, enough time to ride it out. Well, here's a novel idea. Why don't you try to miss half or 2/3 of those next 3 major market meltdowns over the next 15, 20 years of your life? And you can retire at 60 or 65 rather than working till you're 80. And I'll go you one better even. once you're retired, you're supposed to have a whole lot more money in bonds. Never mind the fact that in 1981, interest rates peaked at almost 20%, and they've been coming down ever since, all the way till last year. And now interest rates are rising, and bonds are much more risky than they used to be. But just by virtue of the Wall Street marketing, as you called it, Tim, if you're 70 years old, you take 100 minus 70, you only have 30% in equity. All seven, the rest of the 70 should be in bonds. Even though when interest rates rise, bonds will go down in value. Bond prices move opposite of interest rates. And interest rates are still near very, very low historic lows. And so they've got a long way to fall. People forget that in the late 70s, Treasury prices lost 32%. In the mid 80s, they lost 22%. So there are certain time periods, bonds are very risky. And that's the other thing. It's got nothing to do, almost nothing to do with your risk tolerance. It's how much risk is in the market itself or the stock or the sector. And that's what we try to manage around. We try to measure the risk and the probabilities in the market, not try to manage to the client, because that doesn't work.
Right.
And what they want to do is, you know, they want to fill out a questionnaire and do all this stuff just so they can profile them and see how they'll behave if something happens.
Well, the questionnaire really that you fill out at other shops is designed to have, you're telling the person, it's like a fake psychic teller. They're all, you know, you're just telling the person what you want to hear back. Are you risk adverse? Yes, I am. Well, let me tell you how risk adverse we are here at Johnny Bagadone at tripmalladvisor.com. That's what those forms are designed to do. And
well, I'll go even one better. They're actually psychologically profiling you. So if they'll have a questionnaire and they say, okay, if this thing drops 10%, would you feel sick at your stomach and say uncle and want to sell? Or would you double down and say, ooh, now it's cheaper, I'm going to average down? Well, if you're the first, if you're the, quote, wimp, then the next time you come in, they'll propose a bond fund for you that's less volatile. And for the guy that's the gambler that likes to go to Vegas, they'll recommend a go-go tech fund because he actually likes that volatility. The problem is both of those are detrimental to the investor. And what I mean by that is, the guy that's real, supposedly, or the gal that's real conservative, if they get too conservative and they're all in short-term or mid-term bond funds that only make 3% or 4%, they're not going to have enough money to retire. So is that risky? Is that really conservative? If you're guaranteeing they're not going to make enough money to retire, to me, that's risky. Likewise, along that same vein, the guy that loves the action, loves the excitement, okay, he's putting himself at risk by going overboard and being too aggressive with high volatility, high beta stuff. Now, it's not that that's not a bad thing when the market's acting right. It's just that it's like a nuclear dumpster fire when it goes against you. That's why you got to be able to be defensive.
Right.
So are bonds good or are technology and growth stocks good? Well, the answer is yes and no. They're both good at sometimes, and they're good in their own. They each have their time and place. They're a tool.
Danny, why are bond ETFs dangerous?
Well, so bond ETFs are not like an individual bond. The way that they're structured, it's a structural problem with bond. It's not. It's the mutual funds are even worse. But the mutual funds, what they do is think. Most people think of interest rates as like a sine wave, like a wave up and down. If you think of interest rates like a clock, picture a clock. It makes it a lot easier. So 12 o'clock is when interest rates are peaking and likely to come down, and then you got 3 o'clock, and then 6 o'clock, interest rates bottom out, and then they start rising again. Well, bond traders and professional bond guys that are good up on Wall Street, they don't hold bonds to maturity. That's a story for you because they're underwriting corporations. They're raising money for the corporations to support, because that's your real client. You're the cattle. and they're pushing bonds on you. So they tell you, oh, don't worry. When they go down in value on your portfolio, they say, don't worry about it. You're going to hold them to maturity. And so that, but you want to buy bonds when interest rates are high relative to where you are in time and space. When interest rates are likely to drop going forward, your bonds are probably selling at a discount or at par, even. And when interest rates drop, you'll actually get a capital gain. They'll go up in price, and you get your interest. Then when interest rates bottom out and they're likely to go up, bond prices go down in value. So now you have your mutual fund. When people watch these mutual funds, when interest rates drop, all of a sudden these mutual funds perform really well. Their bond prices go up in value. They got a bunch of the unrealized gains in there. And you get these performance chasers, people looking at it and going, ooh, look at that bond fund. It just went up the last couple of years, and bonds are safer than stocks, right? Well, sometimes they're not. And then so they get a bunch of money. So these bond, the mutual fund gets a whole bunch of money right around 4, 5, and 6 o'clock, right? Right when you should be pulling money off the table and starting to book profits, they get a huge cash infusion. Well, the mutual fund manager, and this is true of a stock fund or a bond fund, the mutual fund manager, the client is the fund, not you. You think when you buy a mutual fund, you're the client. So when he gets full of cash, he's got to go buy bonds. His prospectus says, I've got to be 90 or 95% invested at all times. So he gets a bunch of cash at the exact wrong time when bonds are selling at a premium. And he's got to go buy bonds. He's selling them in his own account. But he's buying a bunch of bonds, and then interest rates start to rise. These bonds now go down in value. So now the mutual fund starts going down in price, starts losing money. All of a sudden, people start getting scared. And as the interest rates climb to, say, 10, 11 o'clock, people hit their pain threshold. They go, oh, my gosh, I'm losing money. I'm cashing out. And they will actually sell at just the wrong time when bonds are selling priced at a discount. That's when you should be buying bonds. But this poor man, and the manager knows it. He knows he should be buying bonds right now. But he's got to sell bonds to give people their money back. He's getting net redemptions on the mutual fund. So just by the fact of the way the interest rate cycle works and the fact that the mutual fund, the bond manager, has to buy bonds when he has a bunch of money. He can't time it. He can't wait and sit in cash till it's the right time. And then he's got to sell bonds when he's getting net redemptions because he's got to give people money back. He can't go out and buy a bunch of bonds when he would like to. So he is actually forced, and he may be a very smart bond guy.
All right, Danny, you've been long-winded about this. You added he might be a very smart bond guy. No one cares.
All I'm saying is he's
not you. No, not you. No one cares. I didn't mean it.
Hold on. No, I know that. Wait a minute. The bottom line, he is forced to buy bonds at exactly the wrong time, and he's forced to sell bonds at exactly the wrong time.
Let me clean that up for people before people attack me for going, you just told Danny no one cares about, no. I mean, no one cares about the bond manager. You're adding life to the story. I just needed you to get to why they're bad. You okay?
Well, that was it. Okay. Yeah, that was it. You gotta buy at the right time, and you gotta sell at the right time. I'm sorry. You gotta buy at the wrong time, and you gotta sell at the wrong time. You're almost always wrong.
With the buy right, that's why they're so. God, I don't know who we lost through that. I don't have a Dan interpreter where I can clean that up. That just went on for a while. I love you, stock nerds. Danny loves you. If you want to know more, Dan@revereasset.com, or just call him 855-REAL-WEALTH. I got asked about IPOs. We've done that show. Like, what's the appropriate time to wait? You got to look at the chart. Like, there's no two that play out alike. And so, and they'll provide you different opportunities. To give you a thought about missing out, you know, like Beyond Meat is up 28% this week. That's a new IPO. It's up tremendously from when it IPO'd. And then look at what Uber's doing today. And then look at what Facebook did in the year that it came public. And then look at what Baba did in 2014 of September as it marked the 2014 top into the taper tantrum. So it's so you got to watch. Watching the charts feels like a cop-out of an answer, but it's what I want to tell you. Danny, I've got a note here. This is what it said. You're being duped by marketing. Research, it's our platform. Don't be lazy. I actually know what this note means. You ready for it?
I want to hear this
one. Yeah, so Danny was talking to someone, and he relayed the conversation to me. And this person asked for brochures. We do not do brochures here at Revere. There's a reason why. Because if you just... And you don't... It's, what I'm about to say is not profound, stock nerds. But when you hear it, you're going to go like, oh yeah, no kidding. Nobody puts the truth in brochures. They paint themselves in the best light. It's online dating. Brochures are like Match.com. You can see pictures. They're probably been touched up if they're even the person. All their faults are hidden, and only the best qualities are brought to light. That's what investment firm brochures are all about. That's not reality. So we've offered an alternative for years. We put the onus on you. We make you do the research. Some of you don't like that. Why is that? That's the note about being lazy. You're willing to place your money with people and you're not doing the work. You're believing brochures. That's craziness. You do more investigation of an automobile. You won't buy a car just based on the brochure. How many of you go test drive the damn thing? But yet, you put your money with Johnny Bag of Donuts at stripmalladvisor.com off of a brochure or a web headline or, heaven forbid, their obnoxious Twitter feed because they're singing your song. We offer you an alternative. On our website at revereasset.com, we don't alter these. We don't edit them. And we don't pull them. The entire anthology of every market video we've ever done lives. It's right on our homepage. It says catch tonight's latest market video update, something to that effect. And you can pick any time period. You can go back to the fourth quarter of 2018, and you can watch every video as the market progressed from October 1st all the way through the 31st and see how we handled it. You can pick February of 2018, at the end of January 2018, February 2018, when the big market sell-off was occurring. You can go back to that time frame. You can pick any time frame from when we started doing it. Danny, we started doing videos in 2014, I believe.
It was a while ago, yes.
And you can just see how we handled it. You can see what we had in the portfolio, why we sold it, why we bought. I mean, the transparency to which we offer you is unparalleled in this industry. It's just unrivaled. No one's going to do what we do publicly for free. We don't charge you for this. If you want to follow along, follow along. We know, though, the trouble with following along. It takes the courage of your convictions to act upon your rules. It's a very difficult, it doesn't sound difficult when you say it, but when it actually comes time to take action, it can be difficult, and we get why, and we're not snarky about it. We understand. Look, I empathize. But our website is your research platform. If you want to do research and due diligence on us, go to our website. Listen to, there's a podcast tab. We don't pull any of these down. Wall Street marketing is the worst. And everyone falls prey to it until you hear this, and then you won't anymore. It's not about, hold on a second. It's not about being right or wrong. It's about moving with the ebbs and the flows of the market. And some of you will go, well, that's right or wrong, right? No. It's called taking a position. Like I told you, we took a position this on Friday afternoon. That doesn't mean I'm going to defend it with all my theory and thought process, and I'm not going to let go of it. No, if it undercuts where I bought it, I'm probably wrong, in right or wrong terms, and I'm going to sell it. I'm going to move with the ebbs and the flows in the market. But my rules get me in, my rules get me out. That doesn't always mean it's pretty, whatever pretty means to you. But I tell you, it's a pretty successful strategy for protecting the most important thing, and that's your net liquidating value, your NLV. Your net liquidating value should be more important to you than one individual position. It is to me. And that's how you can just take small losses and let your winners run. Anyway, Danny, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
Well, I just wanted to kind of dovetail on what you said. So when I was talking to this gentleman, and he, you know, like I said, he was fairly active and did a lot of stuff on his own. When he was kind of asking, doing his due diligence, I said, listen, I said, look, do you go to the chart, go to an S&P chart or a NASDAQ, go to the market itself on your screen and go pick out three or four time frames of your choosing, not what I'm telling you, not what any of us are telling you. Go pick, you know, a couple, four or five dates, different times. Market's going down, market's going up, market's going sideways. You pick them. And then go to the corresponding couple days of our videos, because we put them out every single day that the market's open, and go pick those, and you'll get the tenor of what you'll see what we're saying and some of the actions we actually took. And that will actually give you a real, real good, realistic feel for our strategy and how we do things. And anyway, so that's exactly right. That'll give you a better feel than anything you could ever read off a glossy brochure.
But it takes a little bit of work. And I can tell you what, stock nerds, there's a group of clients that we have, and stock nerds and market lovers, that do just that. They love the research. They can call us, but we want you to be critically questioning. We want you to be able to ask really informed questions. We want you to actually challenge us with fact, not with hearsay or what you heard on your favorite news channel, but, hey, I saw you guys do this, and it's a repeating theme in one of your videos. Can you explain it? Because of what we're doing, I'm telling you, I don't think anyone else from TD, Schwab, I don't think anywhere from Fidelity, they're talking about the VIX futures. I don't think they're giving you fact-based. They're just telling you theory. They're reporting what's happening. You already know that. If you want to know what's happened, tune into the news. If you want to start working the right side of a chart that is yet to print, well, we're your source.
I'll go you one even better. So where else are you going to actually have access to the three people that are actually making the investment decisions in real time on your portfolio? If you're at a, it doesn't matter. Take your pick, a full brokerage, Merrill Lynch, A.G. Edwards, Charles. And if you've got a pie, you know, if you've got a guy they're known as asset gatherers, that's just the client relationship manager. They love that word, client relationship manager. And he puts you in a bunch of funds. He's outsourcing to the fund manager somewhere else. You're never going to get to talk to that guy. You can't call up the fund manager on the phone and say, hey, I saw you bought this yesterday morning. Why did you do that? That's a big difference. I mean, you get direct access. You get direct access to the people that are actually making the decisions.
You know, that's true. That is one of the biggest, I think that's one of the biggest selling features of the shop is actually, because a lot of our clients are still actively trading, or they really are just like the markets, and being able to call and talk to us about what we're doing and talk strategy, yeah, is absolutely a big deal. Real quick, two last things here, Danny, and then we'll wrap it up here. I love newspapers. I still do. I read about two to three a day. And the Journal occasionally runs these advertorials. And they ran one on exchange-traded funds this week, and it was interesting, or just investing. It was on the 9th. If you ever want my content, just email me. I'll send you what I can. And there's this thing called 4 Steps to Common Sense Investing. And they always, it seems like that, not just the Journal, but everybody seems to, common sense investing is behind index funds, and it's never, ever taking money out. And when you start peeling back the onion, people don't want you to take money out because they don't get paid. Their 12b1 fees when you take money out, they don't get paid. If you go to cash and you're not invested, and it's just how the way the world works on Wall Street. They need you to never leave, and they tell you things that you'll miss the big up days, and they sell you on the fear of missing out. It's one big psychological kick to the head. But the thing they never tell you when they say just always keep investing, always never take it out, they never tell you the one thing that trumps all of this. And that the market is not on your time. So you have to understand the moment you step into the market and you want to make money in the market, one, it's not guaranteed. But Wall Street sells you, and I think it's nefarious the way they do. They sell you on the presumption of success. It's dangerous. It's dangerous to presume that you're going to be successful. Somebody stepped into the market for the first time in the fourth quarter of 2018 after missing out on that epic run and got their butts handed to them. Who knows if they're still invested? And cynical will go, well, that's their fault. No. Someone probably told them that this is how you do it. And it just doesn't have to be this way. The market, the moment you realize that you are on the market's time, and if the market decides to take your money, and it's your money. Now, let's pretend you didn't make any money. You just put it in. It's your money, and the market takes it from you. You think you're going to get it back? What's your strategy to get it back? Like, if your strategy is to just stand there and wait, how dumb does that sound out loud? Hey, the market came along and took my money. I'm just going to stand here and wait for it to give it to me back, boss. But that's what so many of you are allowing, not you maybe, your loved ones, are allowing to happen. Could you imagine your football team, your baseball team, whatever team, standing there going, we're just going to stand here and eventually they'll make a mistake and we'll win. That's our strategy. But when you say, I'm just going to invest all of my money in the index funds, which means you're 100% invested all of the time, which is akin to driving down the highway, driving down your neighborhood street with the gas pedal fully depressed all the time. And it's not the way. That is the most dangerous thing you could be doing to your portfolio. But because of the way you're marketed to, you fall prey to it. And then there comes a time where you need money for cancer treatments or hospice care or long-term care or your child's education. And it's not there because Oppenheimer, dangerous, dangerous, dangerous Oppenheimer, has told you through a picture of a freaking, not a seal. What's the big blubbery animal? Not a...
Walrus?
Yes, walrus. Through the picture of a walrus to just stand there and do nothing. You're being attacked on Wall Street and you're by Wall Street, and you're just going to stand there and do nothing and not protect your family. When I say it like that, it should sound ridiculous to you, because the thought in my head that you would just let someone in and let them take your money from you with not cutting your losses and running and just selling is ridiculous. And then the fact that you would be so scared that you don't have a methodology to get back in, you don't belong in the arena to begin with. And you rarely hear me say that. We try to democratize what these nefarious people are doing to you. And I really hope it's sinking in. But when I tell you, I see this Bogle stuff, he did a hell of a job of getting the waste, getting, he drove down inflation in terms of fees that these nefarious people could be taking from you. Applaud for that. But this thought that you need to be driving down your neighborhood street with the gas pedal fully depressed, invested 100% all the time, and then when there comes a moment where the robbers come into your house and you just stand there and go take everything you want because you have no defense. Well, I don't stand with Jack Bogle at all. And I know that's a really unpopular opinion. Can I do one more thing, Danny?
Sure.
All right. I got to. I'm going to apologize to you on air, Danny. I'm still feeling bad about the part where I told you no one cares, and I was really talking about when you referenced.
Oh no, not at all.
Well, I was talking about the bond fund matter. No, I'm going to get a ton of hate mail going. You're so rude, and I'm not. And that just the way it came out, trying to prevent all the emails from being sent.
Oh, it's David Revere. I said that.
Oh, Airbnb.
You know what's funny? When you said I was the one, so. When you said, what is that animal? Like a walrus? Yeah, that's right, walrus. The only thing I can think of, it popped in my head, is that Beatles song. I am the walrus, cuckoo, ka-choo. I don't know why that popped into my head, but it's the only thing I can think of.
Never heard that.
You never heard that song?
No, never heard that song.
By the Beatles? A huge song. I'm not
really?
Kenny put a drop in there.
All right.
Yes.
Yeah, never heard it.
Yeah, that was during their... They're later hallucinogenic here. That's
you mean
they
the
were,
smoke,
yeah, strange
smoke them if you got them stage? Yeah. So
it's the CBD oil on steroids.
So Airbnb helps slay inflation. This is not my work. This is from an article, Todd Buchholz. And it's really interesting. I'm going to leave you with this. And then I'll tell you what, Danny, do the outro that we normally do. And then I'll read this really quickly because I think it's a lot of you are wondering, you're clinging to old ideas about the economy. And I want to enlighten you for a moment. Go ahead, Daniel.
All right, folks. Well, listen, if you like what you heard, please tell a friend, tell a neighbor. They can just go to revereasset.com. And if they sign up for our daily market newsletter, you get this radio podcast delivered as soon as it's done. You get our daily short market video newsletter. I promise you, we will never spam them. Or it's up to them to reach out to us. You can contact any of us. We made it real easy for you. Dan@revereasset.com, Tim at Revere Asset, or Don at Revere Asset. And by the way, Don's actually out this week. His nephew is graduating from college, so they went and celebrated. And if you'd like to call us old school, you can do that at 855-REAL-WEALTH.
Here we go. And then I'll give you another stock if I haven't done so at the end of the show here. Why is inflation still low? Because the economy is enjoying a positive supply side shock and not going away soon. Every economic student learns about the production function, a simple formula showing that output is a function of land, labor, capital, and technology. The more inputs, the more stuff people can create. The internet and globalization are increasing the magnitude of these factors. Wait, how can we have more land? Thanks to companies like Airbnb, which take idle real estate and make it available in the market. That's how. This efficiently, or effectively, increases the supply of land and curbs the price of vacations. Airbnb has increased the number of available rooms by more than 25% in U.S. cities. With that massive influx, the hotel industry's favorite measures, average daily rates and revenues per available room, have lagged economic growth. How can physical capital grow? Upstarts like Dozer and Yard Club have boosted the supply of equipment by creating a kind of Uber for earth movers and dump trucks. Caterpillar trucks used to sit idle at construction sites awaiting the next task. Now they're available to work elsewhere during off hours. Steamrollers do not complain to the union foreman if they work more than 14 hours a day. There's more capital because existing capital is used more intensively. The internet, through fintech and software, firms like Square, PayPal, Salesforce, Zuora, they foster a freer flow of funds and faster connection of buyers to sellers. Former Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke has described a gush of global savings across borders. Amazon's nifty feature, customers who viewed this item also viewed, helps consumers play a role by considering substitutes. Without leaving the garage or expending a dime on search fees, a shopper looking for, say, a $500 Honeywell portable air conditioner may discover a Black & Decker model that will do the job for $470. By increasing the visible supply of alternatives, Amazon's feature tamps down prices. Research by America's butler, Austin Goolsbee. It actually doesn't say America's butler. It should, though. One more time. Research by Austin Goolsbee, America's butler, who was chairman of President Obama's Economic Council of Advisors, and Peter Klinau, found that online inflation is 1 point lower than the change in the consumer price index. These forces do not explain the entire story, because inflation is, as Milton Friedman taught, a monetary event. The strong dollar, up 20% since 2014, makes foreign goods appear cheaper to Americans and creates a hurdle for domestic companies that try to raise prices. We talked about this earlier, Daniel. Further, the destruction of wealth during the Great Recession spurred households to rebuild their balance sheets, pushing up the savings rate to about 6.5%, almost twice the pre-crisis level, and reducing the velocity of money in the economy. The author, he calculates that together, the supply-side shocks dampen inflation by about 1.5 points. That makes an enormous difference because sleepy inflation allows the Fed to keep interest rates low, which supports equity prices. And when combined with President Trump's new expensing rules, prods firms to invest in even better equipment and technology, which lifts productivity. This is why we are finally starting to see wage gains. This little snippet, stock nerds and market lovers, is so instructive to what is taking place in our economy. I like CMG in the next week. And we'll see you next time on Your Money.